I've proven that you can go places that people may say you're not supposed to be there, and then I go there and get the same amount of love that I experienced in my Black community, if not more love. You know what I'm saying? Just because somebody's trying to connect, because the opposite of addiction is connection.
Welcome to the Most High Show, a show about recovery, spirituality, and all that. Produced, posted, and hosted by people in recovery who have strength and hope and want to share it with you. If you or someone you love is suffering, we want you to know you are not alone. This is the Most High Show.
You can be. Do you want to be on camera? We are live. Okay. That's awesome. That was quick.
That was so fast. Caleb gets it done.
Yeah, Caleb is the producer of producers. How about a prayer, yeah? God, thank you for the opportunity to gather. Thank you for recovery, and thank you for friendship and the means to do this. We surrender this time to your care and control. Amen.
Amen.
Welcome to the Most High Show, made by and for people in recovery. A show about recovery, spirituality, and being human. Our mission is to provide impactful, community-driven media that informs, empowers, and inspires positive change. Somebody tell Liam to shut the fuck up.
And stop complaining.
Real people, real stories, real life. Have fun editing that, Caleb. This is the Most High Show.
Yay!
Woo!
Yes.
Yeah, that's going to be fun for Caleb to edit.
We just talked him up. Now it's like, prove yourself.
Yeah, right. All right, with us today is Brian.
Hey.
W.
Yeah.
And he is coming up on 3 years. Sober? Clean?
Clean, sober, yep.
Maintaining recovery?
Absolutely.
All of them?
All of them, yeah.
Okay, they all count?
Yep.
And he's currently pursuing a bachelor's and a master's. He was formerly involved in gangs in California, and today we're diving into what healing and recovery looks like through the lens of identity, especially as a Black man doing a deep dive and work of change.
Right on.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you. Welome, Brian.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Yeah.
Thanks for having me.
So, California, where in California were you?
Southern California, Inglewood, Los Angeles, the grimy part of, by the water.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Inglewood's got some nice places right?
Yeah, I love growing up. I love being from where I'm from. Yeah. I mean, you know, just took some turns that led me into some dark places.
Yeah. And how long have you been in Georgia?
I've been back since 2017.
Okay.
I don't know, this Southern California to Georgia pipeline for people in recovery is a little...
I begged Christian to be on the show. I was like, please, man. Please. Because I know he's from California, but yeah. Growing up in California, man, it's like, you know, I don't know any other... I just think gang activity is inevitable. If you have that displacement of self, because as I learned about myself, right, I was an addict before I picked up any drug. You know, I had this inadequacy that I felt as a child that isolated me and separated me from, I guess, what we'll say the norm, right? I looked for the misfits, and I looked for the, you know, different path of life.
Yeah, we got a room full of misfits
right now.
So it's just we're on a different wavelength now. Yeah. Mystic misfits. Mystic misfits.
What does that mean? Break that down for me.
Mystic misfits.
Like it's
can't hardly say
so
it.
So like a mystic. Mystical? A mystic is kind of somebody who's in between, right? Doesn't quite, you know, kind of like fades in and out different philosophies, thought processes. You know, environments, and then the misfits are,
what we used to be.
I love that band.
I like that.
Yeah, I like what you said about there was something, some condition in you that was there that pulled you away from, you said the norm. I was thinking like love and authentic love and connection.
Yeah, somewhat.
Did you have that? Was that available to you as a young person?
I would say it was. It's just that I don't know if it looked.
Try to talk on to.
I would say that it was. I would say that, you know, my mom, I grew up in a I grew up in two single parent households, right? My mom lived in Inglewood and my dad lived in South Central. So I would go back and forth, you know what I mean? But my mom did the best she could. It was love, it was tough love. You know, didn't have a lot of. I think I was struggling for mental health at an early age. But like, so what I realized is when I went to school, you know, I was too thuggish to be like, I was too something to be in with the cool kids or whatever, the people that, whatever that was doing X, Y, and Z. And then when I went to the streets, I was like too intelligent to be. So that isolated me in both areas, you know what I mean? But I chose the streets, so.
Yeah.
I don't know if that makes sense, but I just felt displacement, you know?
Yeah.
Displacement.
What do you think it was about the people who were living a lifestyle that was in the streets that attracted you to that?
I think it was more so independence, like just having your own brain, creativity, like to be who you wanted to be. I didn't start off gangbanging. I started off like a tagger. I was a tagger. Uh-huh. I wrote on stuff, and that was like my way of lashing out, or you know, like graffiti, you know what
yeah
I mean? That was my way of lashing out or being a misfit, as we say, and then that eventually got shut down by my neighborhood. Like, we couldn't, you know what I mean, like if you're gonna be part of a crew or any type of
yeah
thing, then you had to be because we called them tagging crews. So they, you know, they had a you know, days at the park where we had all the taggers had to fight the gang members.
Yeah.
And that was like more so your initiation to the hood, you know, to where I was raised at. So it just stuck with me. I mean, I didn't really like, I wasn't a super gang member. I didn't do like super, I mean, you know, the normal stuff or whatever, if whatever that looks like, but I wasn't like the super killer or super tough gang member, but that mentality always stuck with me.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how I got into like drug dealing and, Just being out there, man. Letting the streets raise me, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know exactly what you mean. I like you giving context, because I feel like when I say tagging, people in Georgia aren't sure what tagging is.
No,
like,
yeah.
Oh, on
or
Instagram?
Tag banging, yeah. So you know about, that's exactly what it was.
You know, and you would top somebody.
Yeah.
You know, they had their name, and then you write your name on top. You write their name on top of their name. But then you cross their name out. Yeah. And that was a gut punch, major war.
Really,
I'm on site.
Yeah.
We are going to fight if you did that. Now, if you had some respect, you could be kind of along the side. You might be up, but you had to be to the side.
Right. And that'd be like a little kick, you know, like a little.
It's just a little something.
Yeah,
right.
A little something. But like the cross out was like, that's where it was tag.
The topping and the cross out was a major. That was an on site. If I see you. Because everyone would know the names.
And don't write better than that person, too. It's like, cause I was a good tagger. I could write, man.
Oh, yeah.
A little art, you know what I'm saying? My letter started off small and got big. You know?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, fat caps. And,
yeah, fat caps.
Yeah.
Man, you already know.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's crazy. You're taking me back, man. Yeah.
Yeah.
Nostalgia.
Nostalgia.
Yeah.
And after the show, we're going to the Crog Street Tunnel.
Yeah, I know.
I seen that on your thing. That was very impressive. I liked it, though.
Yeah, you got to go to the Crog Street Tunnel. Yeah, it's so much fun. It's an open site, so you can get there and get your fat caps out. And
can't cross nobody out, though, right?
You got to be kind of mindful where you're. Yeah, obviously, if it's like a beautiful piece of art, you don't want to just put ho shit on top of it, you know? I don't know why it feels weird to ask this question. What does it mean to be a black man in recovery?
I've been contemplating that. What do I say to this, right?
Don't look at me. I have no idea what it's like to be a black man in recovery.
You wrote the question. Yeah, come on, Chad. I would say it's a double-edged sword, man. I'm proud to be black, right? Like I love who I am. I love who I became and who I'm becoming. But to be black back when addiction, so to be an addict, right, and be black and to be criminalized, right, and stigmatized for some of the criminal activities that came with addiction and mental health, right? Like, that's, I mean, I don't know anybody else's, how anybody else's neighborhood is or anything, but it's definitely some turmoil when it comes to how the justice system sees black men or black people when it comes to drugs and drug use, mm-hmm. right? You know what I mean? So, but on the flip side, right? I'm in recovery, and a lot of black families or a lot of growing up back in the 80s, in the early 90s, I didn't know about, and a lot of people I grew up around that were black didn't know about the resources that there are, right? Like,
yeah.
So I feel like I am killing off, you know, generational stigmas by being in recovery, showing that you can get better, you can heal, addressing mental health, you know what I mean, attacking addiction, and creating a new bridge, right? Or a new pathway for yeah. people that come up behind my bloodline. So
and you're recovering out loud, so you're bringing a voice that's not often heard, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I joke sometimes that this is the most white show. You know,
what does that mean?
Because all we have is white people on here. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
That ain't my fault. You know.
I looked at some of your videos. Yeah, I seen one black lady. I think.
Yes.
One black lady. But I didn't think that was like anything. I didn't think nothing of it. I just thought you know, people didn't want to talk about it.
Well, I think, but it speaks to the point. You know. Been around for a while, you know, and let's just be real, like in a lot of the sober living environments, when you go into them, there might be one or two black people in the sober living, right? And I've always thought, like, because to be black to me is like there's a culture involved, right?
Yeah.
It's not like a race thing, it's a culture, and there's a culture in being raised French, you know, Algerian, and there's a culture being raised Korean, and there's a culture, and the culture is what kind of creates some of the separation, right? It's a beautiful thing, but sometimes that's the conflict, is the cultural conflict, the cultural differences, where how conflict resolution, you know, I spent 11 years working primarily with all black people, and I always remember that black people will cuss you out in your face and then ask you to go to lunch. White people will smile in your face and not invite you to lunch. I would much rather be cussed out and invited and still be a part of, because I felt like that's a more real.
Right.
And so that's like a cultural difference.
And I think more so with the black culture, there's fix it yourself. Like, there's no, like, you know, like, I know people were raised like this, where your dad taught you not to cry or whatever, like, crying was soft, and, like, that's how it is in the black culture. Like, so, like, going to a meeting, people, even today, like, when I tell people I go to meetings and this is how I work on myself to get better, they're like, why can't you do it yourself? Like, you know, like, DIY, you know, do-it-yourself type solutions that are, don't work for internal problems for me, for this addict, right? So, it's just a lot of black people haven't bought on to outside help, and they want to keep issues within the family. So, you know, and I don't think that's just in black communities. I think that's a lot of different, you know, like you said, type of community that try to have that family-oriented culture or whatever. But I think it's bullshit. I think it's bullshit. You know what I mean? Truthfully, I don't. And that's my strength is going outside of what I know to be better, right? So you'll find me at an all black meeting, you'll find me at a diverse meeting, you'll find me in Japan on some recovery type stuff, at a convention or something, because that's how I get better, that's how I grow, you know what I mean? And I think, I was raised in California, so when I came to Georgia, it was like a little culture shock, you know, I was really, my mindset was already deeper than white and black, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, but I have to be mindful that there are people that still see white and black. So that's where I'm at now. You know what I mean? But I was really like naive when I first came to Georgia. I didn't think that there was a difference or anything. Like, but I seen some doors that didn't get opened for certain reasons, and I didn't know until later that it was because of my skin color. You know what I mean? So
Well, I'm glad you brought up that culture shock coming from California to Georgia, because there's like where I got sober still, like again, like I got sober in 2021 and there's like regularly Confederate flags, you know, on people's trucks and stuff. Like you see people wearing Confederate hats in meetings and everything. It's like, oh, okay. Like this is still all right. We're here. You know,
and I'm one of them people that's like, that's history. I mean, like I was really like, I know what it means. I like, and it definitely makes me cringe, but I was one of the people that's like, hey man, that's their history. Let them, you know, kind of like, I was kind of on the fence, like, let them have it, you know what I'm saying? But like, no, I seen a black dude in the South, bro, like down close to Florida with a Confederate flag on his truck. And I was just like, what's going on, man? So, I mean, so I don't think.
Yeah, that's not Cali black. That's Georgia black. That's a different kind of black.
That's Val Austin. We don't claim
Val Austin. But I just think that's like wearing a Raiders hat, right? Or like being, you know, wearing an LA Dodgers hat. This is,
right.
Or Atlanta Braves hat. This, some people, I don't think it's all what we think it is. But at the same time, there's people that represent that or see that emblem or see that design and have a different mindset as far as what humanity is, right? You know?
Yeah.
Cause that's it. That's saying that one set of people is better than another set of people. That to me, in certain aspects, when you think about, when you look at the history of that, but I understand that. I understand all that. Like, it only affects you if you allow it to an extent, right?
I experienced the same thing coming from California to here, and when we moved here, you know, it seems weird for me to say, but I'd never considered myself to be in an interracial marriage,
right?
My wife's Filipino. Right. It just never occurred to me that that was a thing, right? It just, the way, in the environment I grew up, it's such a mixture of everybody together. And and it wasn't until I moved here that I realized, oh, I'm in an interracial marriage, because I could see people looking at us.
Yeah, like in confusion. Like, crazy. But
like, they thought maybe I was a veteran or something, you know, picking up out in the, off but on the base or some shit, you know what I'm saying? I was like, bitch, we met in college, dude. Like, you know what I'm saying?
I live in Georgia, man. I live in Georgia. So, you know, I'm not trying to change anything that's going on in Georgia. No disrespect to people that are originally from here.
I think it's good to speak on it, because we're not complaining about it. But when you call something like that, It's to help other, because I think people don't like to talk about this kind of stuff, right? Mm-hmm. And especially when it comes to recovery, like this is a life or death game we're playing here, and we don't got room for this kind of bullshit in these situations. It's about how can we help? How can I help you?
Exactly.
You know.
Right, especially. Like, I love that you compared, you know, when we're talking about the Confederate flag, and you compared it to the same thing as wearing, like, repping a sports team.
Because
there are people who, like, this is just my heritage, because that's what my dad said, and that's what my papa said, and that's what his dad said before him, you know? That's our heritage, you know, and not knowing.
I dated a girl that had Confederate flag.
And, because my high school, straight up, everyone had one. Those, like, phone cases on their trucks that their daddies paid for. Like, it was on everything. And I'm, like, sitting here going, what are we doing here? And they're like, well, that's just my heritage. And it's like, well, I feel like, you know, if it's a sports team, right, if you are a fan of, you know, the Georgia Bulldogs, you're not going to be caught wearing a Georgia Tech shirt, right? Because that's not what you stand for.
Right.
So it's like, if you're going to wear something, you should know what that represents, right? And so in the recovery spaces, I think it's especially important to know that if you are someone who struggles with addiction, you are welcome here, because we all know addiction does not discriminate.
And that's what I found when I found recovery, right? I found a family, I found a people of like minds that I can relate to, and they were all different. You know, they were all different shades or different walks of life, but we all had one thing in common. We were, you know, addicts trying to get better, you know, or alcoholics trying to stay sober one day, you know? So, I don't know, man. I don't know. And I don't know enough. I mean, we can go into the flag thing and America and what they've done.
We don't have enough time.
I don't have enough history knowledge to break down, because I mean, I could look at the flag we represent today and tell you some.
Right.
You know, we should. You know. But anyway, that's not what the
show is. We're not Tucker Carlson here.
That's not what the show is about. Man.
But we have language that speaks to this: principles over personalities.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yes.
And that's important, right? That the principles of recovery overshadow, right? That.
That. Yes.
because it is about helping each other. And there's a it's a gift and a curse for us, man. Like, I really feel like those of us who have chosen to commit and dedicate our life to a path of recovery, right? It's one thing, you get sober. Anyone can get sober. You just, you know, get Obamacare, go to detox, and you're fucking sober.
Right.
Done. End of story.
Right.
But to commit to a life of recovery is a totally different way of living. It's a heart transformation.
Right.
It's a psychic change that happens. And the community that I've found is the richest, most beautiful community of any community I've ever been a part of.
It is.
It's the realest, most loving people. Also, some of y'all get on my fucking nerves, but, you know,
we love
and we respect and we care for each other in a way that I don't think other communities really can even understand.
Right. And that's what, but, you know, with it being like that, you know, it is a massive, diverse community, which is a beautiful thing. But then it's also like the importance of having, you know, like sub-community within it, right?
Yeah.
Like having, like for me, like having queer spaces to go to.
Right.
Like, yeah, we're all sober, but there's some meetings I walk into where I'm like, I'm not supposed to be at this one. Like, let me go.
Yeah.
But like, yeah, like y'all are my people, but let me go with my people. Like,
right.
You know, and so having like the community can look different. Like you come to places around Atlanta and it's like, okay, yeah, like we're good. But you know, you go outside of a big city, and then you know, sticking close to like a tighter group of community, if possible.
Yeah.
You know, and with that, you know, I think in recovery, we, you know, we're all like, oh yeah, like we're all the same, like we all earned our seat here, we're all in this together and whatnot. But there is still, people still have different experiences. Women have different experiences than men. Non-binary people have different experiences than cisgendered people. And like, there's, you know, that array. So how has like that experience been, where it's like, there's been something unique that you feel like, yeah, like we're all one and the same. However, this is something that I really feel like my community needs, or maybe not necessarily needs to address, but something that could be made like aware, you know, like with, again, so again, my experience, I can speak as a queer person in recovery, like the, you know, if I start talking about like my girlfriend, being like, is someone then going to talk about how like, oh, well, my husband, and you know, like getting passive aggressive, and it's like, okay, now I don't feel safe here.
Right.
So it, has there been like a similar experience?
Yeah, it has been, but I like, and that's crazy because where I experienced that, like, they're good friends of mine now. Yeah, recovery people of mine, like, they check on me. I went out to, I was like out towards like Cleveland, Dahlonega, whatever, out that way, like North Georgia, and went to a meeting out there with a bunch of hillbillies.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? People that. People that like didn't wasn't
was it the banjo that gave it away?
No, I don't know, man. It was just like
the bluegrass band on the porch made you kind
of
go.
A lot of land, a lot of space between.
I think
all the tractors parked outside.
You know, and they were saying, I think somebody said something that was inappropriate, I believe, and I approached it, and you know, ended up being good friends with the person. You know, we went out to eat and all that stuff, and it was basically a misunderstanding. Sometimes people don't really know what they're supposed to say to relate. You know what I mean? I've heard people say, you know, what am I supposed to say to this black dude, or, you know, I have a black coworker. What should I say? Like, I don't know. Uninformed.
You're the black ambassador.
Are you the spokesperson?
It's ignorance and uninformation. You know, not enough information, I guess. But yeah. I really like, so that's my thing. I'm a breakthrougher. I break through things. Like, I like to go places that I'm not, well, you know, that they say, I've proven that you can go places that people may say you're not supposed to be there, and then I go there and get the same amount of love that I experienced in my black community, if not more love, you know what I'm saying? Just because somebody's trying to connect, because the opposite of addiction is connection.
Right.
And you know what I mean? A lot of people, and with those spiritual principles that you talk about, Christian, a lot of people in this recovery path, even if they have ignorance of culture, they still want to connect regardless of, because we're all alike. We are trying to struggle. We're trying to survive day to day through, no longer, like if you get some time in here, it really is not about the, alcohol or drugs anymore. It's really, how do I deal with these thoughts of emotions that I don't know how to address, this PTSD, this misplaced anger, my childhood, my daddy not being there. Like, how do I address these feelings, you know?
Yeah. Well, that's a great segue to kind of the next section, which is inner. And you mentioned this in the pre-interview about inner child work.
Yeah.
Inner child healing.
Mm-hmm.
What do you mean by that? Because it sounds really white.
I thought we were breaking stigmas here.
Right. Is that a white thing? Yeah. Yeah, that's what y'all do, man. No.
White nah, people in our feelings.
They go to therapy, man. They go to therapy. No. So it's just, it looks like, wait, what's the question again?
Inner child healing.
Yeah, inner
when
child.
When did you realize your inner child needed healing? How were you exposed to that as a thought process or a path of growth?
I did a thorough step 4. For those that don't know, I'm in a step 12-step program, and I did a thorough step 4 and broke down like a baby, right? And a lot of my resentments and issue came from when I was a child. And there were some things that happened as a kid, you know. I mean, it's not too much. I'm unique in my story, but I'm not, you know, the things that happened to me have happened to everybody that's been in this path. I had to dig deep and find out why I was angry, why I was scared, you know, why I felt inadequate, and a lot of, you know, and that's a work in progress that I'm doing today. And, you know, when I get that relief, it's euphoric, man. I feel great. So we do a podcast too. We do a podcast called Unbroken Stories, and we dive into a lot of that stuff. My childhood issues come from my dad, a little bit from my dad, a little bit how my mom dealt with me in certain cases, mm-hmm. and going to jail. You know, I didn't go to prison or anything, but going to jail and being in a 23-hour lockdown, you know, I didn't even think that was a thing. And then, you know, I talked to a professional. They were like, that can cause you PTSD. I didn't even think, you know. But so you just learn. As I got older, I just learned that, you know, a lot of things may have been stemmed from trauma and some childhood trauma. And and I found out how to work on that and how to I'm a part of a 12-step program, and I recover out loud. You know, I'm not scared to talk about how I feel, and that plays today in my everyday life with my employer, with people that are close to me. If I feel some type of way, and I feel like it was cause of how I interacted with a person or a thing, I will speak on it. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Definitely. And on recovering out loud, you know, like that's a, you know, it's a phrase we use a lot, but what does that look like to you?
It does. I'm learning how to do it, because a lot of the things that we learn in our 12-step programs is the anonymity piece, right? It looks like me talking about what I've been through and what I, you know, how drugs and alcohol played a part in my life, not because, you know, I talk about the whole shebang, the partying, and then how it was used for coping. You know what I'm saying? If I can get that, that's recovering out loud. Like, I'm talking about why I did drugs or why I did this, and how I moved forward to get out of it, and what my life looks like today to stay out of it, right? Or to stay from picking up drugs or alcohol to mask how I feel, right?
So
I have to have that conversation on a daily basis with people, because let's be honest, like, everybody's not in recovery, right? You rub shoulders with people, and, you know, if I say, hey, man, you triggered me, you know, say, well, where'd that trigger come from? Well, back in the day, I used to get high. And right, right. You remind me of this dude that stole from me. So I'm telling, you know, like, you robbed me. I have to explain stuff. Not in that depth. I'm being funny with it. But sometimes I have to speak. You know, I got to be honest with myself. That's recovering out loud and advocating for people that are in recovery, that, you know, we might get the short, you know. There's a stigma that goes behind. Even with people alcoholics and addicts in recovery. There's a stigma that people throw at us to make us, to still try to belittle us, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, like, what was wrong with y'all? Why couldn't y'all get it right like we did, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think everybody needs a 12-step program if you, or some type of recovery pattern. I won't say 12-step, but some type of recovery, you know, outlet. To better yourself. It doesn't have to be just for addicts and alcoholics, you know?
Yeah.
I could have used some of this stuff, you know?
Like what you said with, like, you know, recovering out loud can talk, it can be about talking about how you went from a hopeless state of mind to how you live your life today. But it can also mean, like, hey, this thing you did, it upset me.
Right.
Like, can we talk about it?
Right.
Because that is, like, a huge piece of, like, emotional intelligence and communication that is lacking in so many people, you know, like even like people in recovery, like we learn, you know, it just, especially in a 12-step modality, we learn the importance of doing that.
Right.
It does not mean we are very good at doing it, right. You know, but being, it is uncomfortable. Yeah. Like, especially to know, like,
tell somebody about your boundaries
like being at work. Right. And knowing that you have attitude and being like, oh shit, like, I really got to admit, like, hey, what I said earlier was really rude. Yeah. That wasn't right of me. I'm sorry. Like, I'm feeling this. I took it out on you. I'm sorry. That was wrong. How can I make this up to you? That is embarrassing because no one else at work is doing that, right. You know?
But it's so healing, right? It's so healing.
Yeah, and it can help other people see, like, oh, that's an option. Right. Like, I can just be like, hey, I was wrong. Or, hey, this thing you said, it upset me. You know, if you set that precedent, because someone... Yeah. Like, in order for something to be a trend, someone has to start it.
I agree.
You know?
I agree. And also, it gets it out of my head, because in my head, I'm thinking it's World War III, and you probably you're in your cubicle plotting on me, I'm plotting on you in my cubicle, and whoever gets to the car first,
you're right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, it's going to be a war in the parking lot. That's where my brain goes. So, for me, it's better to be like, hey, you know, what I said made you feel this way, but what you said made me feel this way, and... Or, you know, I felt this way from your response, and I just want to apologize for my part and leave it at that, right? Mm-hmm. A lot of my conversations start like that today.
What would your younger self say to you if they were able to see you now?
Good job, man. I'm proud of you. Keep pushing. You're starting a new legacy, you know? And I'm getting better from the work that you're doing. Like, my inner child is healing from the work that my older self is doing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What are some signs that you've noticed that, like, your inner child is healing?
I think when we was doing the spirit animal stuff, that solitude piece, I consider solitude, and it's not isolation. I consider alone, because a lot of... I can sit alone and get some peace without having to have some validation from people, right? Or, you know what I'm saying, the opposite sex or what have you. I'm able to spend time with myself and love myself. You know, it starts from within. You know, I was from that inner child being crippled, I sought love. I sought validation from everybody around me, you know what I'm saying? And that's what recovery has shown me, that, you know, the people that come around me, they don't want anything from me. There was always a give-take relationship in addiction, right? What can I get from you, and what can I give you to make you give me what I need, right? Here, it's just genuine love. So I don't seek the validation, because you guys are teaching me how to love myself, you know, individually. Like, I don't know if it makes sense, but
yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Everything you need is already inside you.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, and it's a difference between having authentic connections with other humans, which is also kind of weird, you know, in the beginning for sure, and needing that to feel good about who I am. That's
right.
That's like a thin line, you know.
Yeah.
And I usually don't see the line until I'm backflipping over it. Right. And I go, oh, shit, that was it. Nope, that's codependency. Yeah, okay, my bad. Let me back up.
Pleasing.
Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And with that polarity, like, is there a time from your childhood that specifically that you think about being like, oh, damn, like, that was a pivotal moment for this coping behavior that I've had to undo?
Yeah, I was involved in a murder This is y'all. You brought it out of me. When I was 18 in California, I was involved with in a murder. And the only reason I was there is because I wanted to be a good friend, I guess. I wasn't part of it. It was something that so-called friend set up. And you know, I remember getting that call, and I had been pushing on with my life. I was going forward. You know, this is some of the people that I grew up with that were still hanging in the trap, doing whatever. I just turned 18, had got a job, graduated high school, and me and his friend had fell out, and we hadn't talked in months. And he called me and was like, you know, come through. And that validation from that friend is what I was seeking. You know, that's what I talk about, that childhood validation that I seek from people that I thought were, I don't know how to explain it, you know, people that I looked up to or thought were going in the direction that I was going in. And I came, you know, I showed up at a place, and it was a murder that took place, you know what I mean? Like, inside of a place, I almost got killed, you know what I mean? And from that, I realized that I seek friendships in the wrong type of people to make myself feel validated in my, you know, like my manhood, you know what I mean? Like, if that's, you know, I use the streets for my manhood, which is doesn't have anything to do with manhood, as I learned today. It's being a man is paying your bills, learning how to regulate your emotions, expressing the proper emotions at the proper times. You know, that's what manhood looks like to me today. But
I mean, by that definition, I'm an excellent man.
Well, you know, be adulting, you know what I mean? Yeah, being able to see yourself for yourself and not try to be what you think society should be. Not trying to be what society wants you to be, right? Or think what you think society thinks you should be, I guess.
Right. I mean, that's like a pretty, you know, literally life-altering situation to find yourself in. Mm-hmm. And there's a popular meme that I can't help but think about where it says, like, oh, my need for validation has taken me places I wouldn't even go with a gun. Right. And but literally.
Yeah. And I almost died in that situation. Yeah.
Almost got shot. So definitely, you know, like, went from going from a situation like that, seeking that validation, to now you're actively getting two different degrees simultaneously, yeah, building a better future for yourself, yeah, and for others around you.
Yeah.
So can we talk about that?
Absolutely. Yeah. Let's get out the BS and let's talk about the real stuff.
Get out the BS and the real BS, Bachelor of Science.
So I am currently pursuing my bachelor/master's at Kennesaw State University for IT and information technology. Also, I work in recovery. I work at Atlanta Recovery Place as a BHT, behavioral health tech, which allows me to help others with my experience in recovery, right? Help people be accountable and get to ask people what's right with them today versus what's wrong, right? I'm also CARES 68, which showed me that my 12-step program, which is my pathway, is not the only way people can seek recovery. But with the college piece, man, it was something that I always wanted to do. I always wanted to do this, man. I always had, even as a younger me, I always wanted to go to school for higher education. I just like learning. I like books. I used to carry a little pocket dictionary. Remember, you know what I'm saying? The pocket thesauruses, uh-huh, and dictionaries. I used to, because I like words, right? And I would like to know what they meant. And, you know, of course, I wanted to be a rapper, so the thesaurus was to, like, flip the words and make them rhyme. But anyway, I didn't get a chance to do that because I ended up going on a run. So that murder that I was involved in, I ended up going on a run. This is actually how I got to Georgia. I ended up going on the run because I was accessory. And it just paused my life. Paused my life in a way that got me deeper into drugs, deeper into just inadequacy, not feeling, not knowing. I was in a whole new state. I didn't have any family here. And I just, so me going back to, me going to school once I got clean and sober, it was more like a reward. And it gave me, I mean, I don't only get education from school. I get structure. You know, I get, I mean, it's a lot comes with it, like the doing, having assignments and having due dates and being able to, like, you know, say, hey, I'm not hanging out. I got work to do. It just gives me peace. I don't know. It gives me a structure. And being in recovery with the spiritual principles and having those type of responsibilities, it just helps me be a better person. And with that, what I plan to do with the education, and it's never too late to go to school. I don't care what nobody says. You can go to school and get whatever. You can get your GED degree, whatever you want. It doesn't matter the age. I used to, you know, at one point in time, I used to think I was too old to go to school, you know? Mm-hmm. But what I plan to do with my degree is to, I want to open up an RCO, you know, and I'm going to call it RCO and have a business, an LLC for sober living, for people to come and have, you know, be a resident and live and stay clean and sober, right? And I'm going to call it The Last Spot. The last stop. Yeah.
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 Oh, yeah.
So as we're kind of like wrapping this up, what message would you have for somebody who's out there and feeling lost? And maybe they've tried everything and they have that sense of not feeling a part of. Mm-hmm. What would you say to somebody in that situation?
Don't give up, man. I'm trying to think what I would tell myself. Don't give up. There's help out here, right? And I think more so this year, I've seen the Recover Out Loud piece go across the world. So I'm sure there's people are starting to hear about this recovery piece and knowing that there's an out. Talk to somebody, man. Talk to somebody, you know? Like my last days of getting high, emotions came out, man. I cried. It didn't matter. I wasn't embarrassed, you know, because we, you know, as we go through this addiction, it's embarrassing, right? We have the guilt and shame. I had the guilt and shame. So even when I was at my ends, when I would break, I still had to stand tough, right? I had to be tough around the people that I was around because there were snakes and crooks, right? So I didn't get a chance to cry or get fed up enough until I was alone by myself. So I would feel that emotion, man, and let it out and talk to somebody, you know? And all it takes is that one person to respond, somebody like ourselves, right, to see that one person that will actually give that person a chance, show them where to go, give them hope, right? So to the person that's struggling, that doesn't see an end, there's hope, man. There's hope. We are living proof. We are, man. Like, it's free. You can get it, you know?
Amen. Yeah. Anything else?
Yeah, I kind of have one last thing.
Yeah.
Are you going back to the Confederate flag?
Well, darn tootin', you got me. No.
Darn tootin'.
That was the quickest thing I could think of, as if I don't talk like a Southerner off the
darn
air.
Darn tootin'.
I'm probably going to retire in the South. I love the South. It's
the that kid version of you that you were talking about that didn't fit in with the in crowd at school and the kid that didn't fit in at the street at school, what would you go back in time and tell that kid?
You didn't know you were going to have therapy in here, huh?
Yeah, right? It's okay to be alone. I would tell him to find your passion. Find your passion and go forward. I don't know.
I think that was profound. It's okay to be alone.
Yeah, it's okay to be alone because that's what it was. I was seeking a group, and I was already good alone. I'm looking back at some work that I've done. People hung around me because of me. You know what I mean? Like, I was trying to fit in, but people.
Well, I mean, that was one of the gifts that you said is that you're able to be in solitude.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You're able to be in your body and be yourself now. So it makes sense that that is the message you would say to your younger self. Yeah. Like, it's okay to be you, to be alone. You don't have to fit in to eat, and you can be who you are. Yeah.
That's right.
Amen. All right. Thank you, Sarah. What a profound question.
I had to make up for the start of the show.
We'd like to thank all the donors and supporters who make this show possible. Yeah. We are going to be taking a couple weeks off, but we will be back with some more guests. I think we got Bates, who's coming onto the show. This is his brand, Not You Clothing.
Love it.
He'll be here. Thank you to Jason on the ones and twos, Caleb doing quality control, and to our in-studio audience. This is the Most High Show.
Most High.
That's good.
I'm sitting in the water sweating.
I really
hot, bro. I was sweating.
Yeah.